what I thought I would touch on over the next 15 minutes or so is a is why I think the UK food industry is so good. In order to explain that, I did want to start a little with Greencore to describe what our business is today, where we've come from and where we're going, and then touch on some of the some of the features, as I stand a little bit detached, should have gathered from my accent that I don't live full-time in the UK, and some of the things that I think are just wonderful about the industry here, but also some of the reasons why I think a lot of that source of wonder is actually more hidden than it should be from the population and the economy and government more broadly, and some ways in which perhaps we might be able to unleash the industry to achieve even more in terms of employment and growth and technology and really a response to very profound and long-term opportunities and challenges that I think the industry will face around the world. But I might start with Greencore. So, our business has evolved a lot. We feed about half of the UK population every week, so about one in two UK consumers buys one of our products every week. About three in four buy one of our products every month, and about 90% of the UK population either buy or consume one of our products every year. So we're very pervasive in terms of the role we play within the UK population. We employ a lot of people in the UK. At peak, actually, almost 12,000. We are, it's a particularly Irish comment this, but we are Ireland's largest company in Britain in employee numbers. Which I get reminded of a lot, principally by the Irish government, who continue to ask me why we only employ 40 people in Ireland. But it's a. I'll say more about that in a second. We play a very, very strong and very active role across the UK grocery industry. We have meaningful and growing and exciting, actually, trading relationships with all of our customers. Across a wide, wide variety of product forms, sandwiches, salads, sushi, ready meals, soups, cakes, desserts, cooking sauces, and many others, and hopefully more to come after that. Interestingly, in the context of such an innovative organisation as Camden BRI, about half our products are new every year. It's an astonishing level of product innovation. That's a feature both of our business directly, but also of the part of the food industry in which we play, and really is unmatched in many other parts of the food market and in many other parts of the world. And certainly, if I reflect back on my time in 9 years in McKinsey working with food and beverage companies around the world, they used typically aspire in general to having something like 20% of their revenue coming from products that were less than 5 years old. We have 50% of our revenue coming from products that are less than 1 year old. So it's a very, very important part of what we do. We've got a wide variety of physical locations now, about 24 manufacturing plants. We actually open our 24th plant on Friday in Seattle. It is the furthest in geographic distance from and our first plant on the west coast of the United States. We also have 20 different distribution depots. And between that and our various administrative centres, we've got about 50 locations around the world. So it's been a real step up. We hope to pass $1.5 billion of revenue by the end of this year. That's a trebling of revenue in the last 5 years. We've also had a near six-fold increase in our profitability and about a tenfold increase in the value of the business. In fact, more by virtue of where we were than where we are. There's a decent chance, actually, that we could have done a whip around about 5 years ago and together bought Greencore if we'd wanted. It would be a little harder to do that, even with the Warburton Trust on my side. But our business has grown, and it's grown by delivering for lots of our stakeholders, not just shareholders. I'll just say a brief word about that in a second. That is an entirely different business from what Greencore used to be. Our history, actually, is that we used to be the state-owned sugar processing monopoly for Ireland. That was the business that was privatised in 1991. We were owned by the Irish government, in fact, until 1991, and we were the very first privatisation that took place in Ireland. And for the first decade of our history, we were very much an ingredients business focused around sugar and related agribusinesses, malt, grain trading, animal health, farm machinery, things like that. So it was a huge step out in 2001 when Greencore bought Hazelwood Foods. And we ran for about 5 years with two very different divisions, and basically an old Greencore, which was an ingredients business, and a new Greencore, which it took us a while to put, get our arms around, which was the former Hazelwood business, which has become the Greencore that we are today. Our sugar business was actually ended overnight, about 3 months after I joined, actually. Hopefully those two events were disconnected, by European regulatory reform in November 2005. And that shut down the largest and most profitable part of what was in Greencore, which was our sugar business. And so we had to do two things to survive as a business. The first was we had to win a very contentious legal case against the Irish state in order to get fair compensation for the ending of the sugar business. If we hadn't done that, we would have been insolvent and had to wind up the totality of our business. And then having got that, we had to figure out how to deploy that and grow. So what we basically did was we sold off all of the remaining ingredient businesses. That was about 15 different lines of business. And we redeployed that capital into the convenience food area. Firstly, by building further scale in areas we were already in, and then by extending our geographic reach to the United States as well, alongside what we were doing in the UK. It's been a pretty remarkable transformation, actually, since 1991 in terms of where the business was and where we've gone to. And one kind of small metric that illustrates that, because often CEOs will say, "Oh, the business has been transformed," but the metric that I often cite on that is if I look at the business that was privatised by the Irish state in 1991 and I look at the assets that we have today, less than half of 1% of the assets of Greencore today were part of what was privatised in 1991, less than half of 1%. So it's been a pretty profound level of change through that. The business has changed a lot in my time in it. Some of that, and particularly since I was appointed CEO 8.5 years ago, I've mentioned the level of portfolio change, but we've also had massive levels of organisational and cultural change through that. So I'm the longest serving director on our board now. Fortunately, I'm still the youngest. I'm sure that will change relatively soon. We are the only member of my senior management team who was broadly in the same role then as they are now is Helen. Everyone else is either new to the business, for the most part new to the business actually, or are in a completely different role from where they started. And the processes and culture by which we run our business is very different from where we were before. Indeed, if I reflect back on the cultural change we've gone through, I mean, we've gone from being, you know, an island of Ireland business to an international one, from being a culture that was really defined by being a slow-moving, deliberate ingredients business to a fast-moving value-added food company. We've gone from a business that was very, very financial in orientation to one that is much more strategic. We've gone from running the business as a holding company to running it as an operating business. And we've gone from a sense of being under siege and under attack everywhere, whether that was by regulators, the Irish state, unions, farmers, to one that's much more confident in its own skin. And much more positive in the outlook as we look ahead. And finally, we've gone from viewing the business as a series of decentralised, quite different things, to running the business in a much more common or systemic way, which we actually internally brand as the Greencore way. Our strategy looking ahead is quite simple. We have a vision that we, I think, relentlessly articulate, which is that we want to be a fast-growing international convenience food leader. And each of those words are actually important as we think about our business. We fundamentally believe in the organisational power of growth, and that creates more opportunities for our teams, for our people. It creates a better dialogue and a win-win relationship with our customers. And it gives us a momentum around which we can invest, and a particular set of investors who value that. We're able to deliver that because of the long-term structural growth that we see unfolding in what's referred to as convenience food. That market looks and feels very different in the two geographies in which we're in. Some of those differences include a UK environment which is largely driven by the retail or grocery channel for food versus a US environment which is largely driven by food service and convenience stores in the parts of the market that we're in. And then we really value leadership. We wrestled with this some years ago, which was there's a difference, a profound difference actually, between mathematically being the largest player in your part of the market that you're in market share terms, and actually embracing the leadership responsibilities that come with that in terms of product development, customer engagement, regulatory engagement, food safety standards, nutritional obligations, and thinking more broadly about what you're trying to do. We actually firmly believe actually that without doing that, you can sustain leadership positions going forward. We also, and this might sound a little strange coming from someone who spent the best part of a decade in McKinsey, one of my real lessons actually on in this job that I'd share with you is that the longer I'm doing the job, the more I think it's about people and the less I think it's about strategy. In that it is, of course, important to operate in broadly in the right parts of the market where there is growth and structural availability of margin and a whole lot of other kind of financial or economic concepts of that type. But actually, what really unleashes the organization and gives you the potential to capture that is the power of your capability, your people, and your culture. And about 3 years ago, we made a very, very market intervention internally, which was to broadly say, listen, we're finished with the big portfolio change here. At least everything that's in Greencore now is staying in. We're not doing any more divestments. And we're going to pull the group together, really discover what unites us, because it was a business that had largely grown by acquisition, actually, and try and in a bottom-up way, understand our culture and capability, and then really reinforce the strong elements of that, or the strengths that sat within that, into something that was more consistent and systematic across our business. And it's been very, very powerful in terms of unleashing the performance of our group. It's increasingly recognised by the external stakeholders that we work with too. We have no growth without our customers growing. And one of the examples I give about just how profound that change has been in terms of the relationship that we have with our customers is if I go back 5 years and look at the average length of supply agreement we would have had with our customers across our business in the UK, it was probably somewhere about 2 years. Whereas now it's about six. So to have a forward-looking visibility and a shared agenda in terms of what we're trying to do with our customers in categories that were not traditionally viewed or managed in that way has been an enormous change, and very in keeping actually with some of the important trends and opportunities that I see as to how the industry may evolve from here. We've had to put in place a similar set of agreements with our and ways of working with our suppliers, which is, of course, a huge, huge part of a largely fresh business like Greencore. And also, we've had to think about that, given the very high level of employment and the very high level of engagement we have in the communities in which we operate, in terms of how we think about the relationships beyond work that we have in the communities where we locate our facilities. All of that we pull together into what we call the Greencore Way. And I used to spend a lot of time in the early parts of this job describing our business as an unbranded business. But actually, increasingly, I don't see it that way at all. We're a highly branded business. We're a business-to-business brand that has real consistent and positive resonances with our customers. And that's how we think about what we do. If I stand back a little and try to think about how some of those themes play out versus the UK food industry, there are a few things that really strike me. And I come, by the way, from a history of working and engaging in the food industry in Ireland. Indeed, as many of you may know, my brother spent the last 5 years as the Minister for Agriculture and Food in Ireland, so I'm quite connected into how the Irish state thinks about the food industry. And I'm always struck, actually, about how actively, aggressively, and emotionally the Irish food industry is regulated and promoted in an international context, in marked contrast to how the UK food industry is promoted and understood. I think that's interesting because actually the quality of the UK food industry, I think, is outstanding. Not just in terms of some of the macro measures, 3 million people working here, the UK's largest private sector employer, but also in some things that will resonate a lot with a group audience like this. There's no safer country in the world to eat food than the UK. Or as I often point out to our US customers, you're 10 times more likely to die of food poisoning through Listeria or E. coli in America than you are in the UK on a per capita basis. 10 times more likely. It's astonishing. And that doesn't happen by accident. It's a combination of there's this enormous level of collaboration and alignment across the food supply chain in the UK that I think is truly unique. The way in which suppliers, manufacturers, retailers and regulators work together on fresh food and on food safety in the UK is unsurpassed anywhere in the world. Truly unsurpassed. You could have a rich and quite pointed debate around who created that and the respective roles of manufacturers versus retailers versus regulators in that, and I think that's fine. But where we are right now is that we have a wonderful supply chain. That was one of the reasons why the industry struggled so hard with the horse meat scandal of 3.5 years ago, because the industry that we knew we had was not being represented in how it was being described by others. Now, ultimately, actually, the data demonstrated that the industry that we had stood up on any international comparison. I think you also have a level of innovation in the UK food industry. You've got a level of a better connection, frankly, to science and technology in the UK, particularly around short shelf life food solutions. Enormous progress on things like sustainability, the construction of local supply chains. I really do sometimes despair would overstate it, but I'm disappointed actually by the absence of recognition about just how good the UK food industry is by any objective set of criteria on any relative basis as you contrast it with other developed market economies. I think some of the reasons why that capability is hidden are a little unfortunate, but they are what they are. So there's a perception that this is very much a domestic industry. It is actually largely domestic. It doesn't have to be. There's tremendous opportunity, and I hope the reference case of what Greencore are doing will highlight this in terms of taking that capability, which is so valued in other parts of the world, and deploying it against the market and consumer trends in other markets. I think there is an opportunity to do that, but it is largely a domestic industry at the moment. I think there is a perception that, frankly, is not backed up by the facts that it's low tech. I think there's actually loads of interesting science and technology going on in the food industry. I think there is an unfortunate ownership construct in that there are actually very few domestic public company champions in the food industry in the UK right now. The industry largely divides into big, privately owned, very well-run, but somewhat secretive businesses in terms of their public profile and the divisions of large multinationals. There are very few businesses like Greencore, actually, that are publicly listed here. And they get an opportunity to talk about what they do. That, I think, is unfortunate, and it's in contrast to how the food industry has evolved in other countries. And I do think that the industry suffers by the absence of very strong championship from government. I really do. I think it's, if I look at a lot of the engagements that I would have had with central government here, you know, it comes very much from a rural affairs perspective rather than from an economic growth or industry perspective, and I think that is unfortunate and it's a missed opportunity. I think as we look ahead, I think some of those things may take some time to confront and may indeed never be confronted. But I actually still look forward very positively in terms of the prospects for the UK food industry. I think part of that is around the opportunity for growth, domestic growth. We're playing to structural and interesting trends in terms of demography, consumer behaviour, lifestyle choices, a absolute proliferation of eating occasions, and I think that's going to create loads and loads of opportunities for the food industry here. I think there's going to be lots of interesting challenges, some of which are short-term and some of which are long-term, that in aggregate create wonderful opportunity for the food industry, be that in nutrition, health, obesity, climate change, sustainability, and it's going to require great minds and great intellect and great innovation to tackle those things, and the people who do that well, I think, will have wonderful businesses in the food sector. I think there's an opportunity for the international development of the UK food industry to a greater degree than is happening at the moment. I am conscious that the examples of companies that have tried to do that and failed get much greater prominence than the examples of the companies that have tried to do that and are succeeding. And there's a perception, therefore, most particularly at the retail end of the market, that actually the food industry is largely domestic and the UK is so different that actually replicating UK capability overseas is hard. I don't actually buy that, but that I recognise that that's a perception that's there. And I think that last bit in terms of international opportunities, and I might finish with this, is goes a little to some of the geopolitical factors that are unfolding that impact on every industry, including the food industry, right now. So, unfortunately, the level of trust in business and in government and in institutions of any kind of scale generally is at an all-time low. And because of that, you're seeing a right the way around the world. It's obviously very evident and hotly contested in the UK right now, but not uniquely in the UK. You're seeing actually a recoil back to more nationalistic and narrow senses of community. I think that's a huge risk to the UK food industry. I think it's a huge risk to industry and indeed the global business system generally. But it's not easy to tackle, and I think the there are a number of very high-profile political events unfolding, one of which is happening later here this month, another of which will happen in the United States later in the year, and the consequences for the global business system, as many of us have known it for decades, of some of those decisions, I think, will be quite profound and dangerous. Without wanting to intervene too much in the political affairs of a country in which I'm only a visitor, I would say that we in Greencore and we in the part of the food industry in which I sit are unequivocal in stating that our business will be less strong outside of the EU than it will be within it. Were Britain to choose to leave, our costs will be materially higher and our revenues will be materially lower. And I think that will be bad. I also think, by the way, as someone who I think feels very emotionally connected to the UK, I have both an English mother and an English wife, and most of my education was actually here in the UK. I find it a little depressing that a country that stood for openness and international trade when very few other people did and pioneered the entire concept of building a global economy in multiple different ways for centuries could be about to recoil from that perspective and that leadership position that Britain has played for so long and with such extraordinary effectiveness for generations. So I really hope that doesn't unfold. If it does, it will create another challenge for the food industry, and of course we'll all have to knuckle down and get on with it. But we should at least recognise that if that is how the UK electorate choose to vote, that there will indeed be consequences in the food industry, and we'll have to tackle them. So with that, I might finish. Just to reiterate, it's been a real privilege to be here, particularly given the role that I know Camden plays. I know there's a wide cross section of the UK food industry here, so thank you for listening to me. This is a great industry with great prospects, but I think at the margin, there's stuff that we can do together to make it even better. So enjoy the rest of the day, and thank you for listening to me.